a call from Mr. Kilkenny at the same time.
Well, we had a very full open house. He should have been here. Quite a show. That's not what I'm here for. Have any questions?
Yeah, Governor LBJ, when he...
Good morning. I have nothing to open with.
What do you think of 2373 with the 90-day extension beyond the 6 months of the having the college, the amendments in general, your reaction to it?
I'm pleased, first, with the overall goal. The overall goal was to get some kind of fence around it. Once we began to achieve that purpose, then it was just as it is typically in the process of legislation, trying to accommodate all the interests that are involved. I became involved with it late yesterday afternoon when I saw the amendments, after I made my proposal of amendments, and wanted to find out why those changes were made, and then there were some changes made after that. The changes being, I asked for 180 days. They said it could be extended. I said, well, okay, then let's put a cap on the extension. And the committee agreed to that. So I'm pleased the way it turned out.
Who do you credit with making the effort, the continuing effort to make sure the bill was drawn that you would not veto? We're told that, well, who do you credit?
Well, I certainly have to credit the chairman of the committee. My first request of her was that, slow it down so that we can sit down and deal with it, and she accommodated that very well, and I'm very happy about that. I talked with her twice so that we could understand each other. She first wanted to know what it was that I was concerned about, and she had a lot of constituencies to deal with, her own committee, the House committee, FLCIO, whomever else, I don't know, AOI. And so I think it worked out very well. It's a good piece of legislation now.
Governor, I have a couple of questions about the revelation yesterday about the housing division. Curious to know how well Greg Smith has kept you abreast of that. I know your calendar shows that you meet with him regularly. Has he been keeping you briefed on this, or were you, like everyone else, surprised to hear about the $4,500 a day problem they have?
You'll have to tell me abreast on what? This, what's this? Abreast of this, what is this?
The revelation yesterday in the House Housing Committee.
Please, keep going.
You're not up to date.
No, I'm not.
You mean you didn't read the Statesman Journal this morning?
No, that's because it was delivered late. And that's the only reason.
Do you ever read it? No.
I must tell you that this is interesting, and I certainly should have, but today was the only time I really didn't get a chance to read either the Oregonian or the Statesman Journal.
What about the rest?
They both came late.
It's your loyal viewer of the channel. The TV stations didn't cover it. Let me see if I can capsulize it. As I understand it, the bonds that the housing division sold provide assistance to lower-income people. They put it out at 1% and have been not getting the participation in the program that they hope to.
Yes.
As a result, they are paying or accruing a $4,500 a day debt that is not being realized. Has Mr. Smith told you about
no,
that problem?
No, not that. However, the fact that the bonds had not been picked up with projects, I've been aware of and been stated more than once that there wasn't anyone coming there to build the low-cost housing that they'd sold the bonds for. That I knew. The other, I can understand because they have the interest to be paid without anybody picking up the money to start paying that interest. What the solution is, I don't know. I presume it'll have to be when they finally get someone to pick those up. They'll make an accommodation at that point. But that's just a reaction to what you just told me. The first part of it I was aware of.
It's similar to the DVA problem with the downturn in the economy and people not participating in the program. It's been estimated that one solution would be to call in the bonds to pay them off with the $93 million that they have. Apparently, what we understand at this point is that can't be done until 1 year from the date that those bonds were taken out. I believe that was October. In the meantime, the state will have accrued about $1 million in interest payments that haven't been...
Well, all I can tell you is that I will check on that and see what the solutions might be. I have a great deal of confidence in Greg and his ability. I really do. He's done a lot, and under, incidentally, some extraordinary times, and particularly when the Ullman bill went through and the real problems we had with that. And so I'm sure there's some way we can resolve it. But I can't, beyond that, I can't answer you.
Governor, the Speaker of the House and the Henderson and Posse attack plan both address reclaiming some of the tax cut pushed by Reagan on the federal level. The Speaker turned a breathtaking tax cut for the upper 5% of Oregon taxpayers. I'm wondering, do you feel that the state's tax policy should get into those considerations, or is that a federal question?
I really don't think that we ought to look for a source of income tax breaks that people get. And that's what's being suggested. I have to, incidentally, I've been asked several times about the Hendrickson-Hustica bill, and I was still trying to, you know, see the bill and find out what it really was, but I've gotten some broad ideas of where it's coming from, and one of them was this. They were talking about this wonderful source of income that Oregonians were getting, and we're going to tax it. Now, we naturally tax it. When I say naturally tax it, if they have a lower federal tax to take against the Oregon return, we benefit. I presume that they want to tax it even more than that. And I really don't think that we should look to that as a source of income for the state.
That should be, that decision was made on the federal level, and we ought to let it.
No, it has nothing to do with the federal decision. It's just what I consider a moral problem in this regard, that there was a tax break. Why look to a tax break to extract more taxes from Oregonians? I just don't think that's a fertile field for taxation.
Governor, tomorrow some legislators are going to be heading to Northern California to look over their Youth Conservation Corps. How do you see that program here in Oregon, especially the pop bottle tax?
I'd indicated earlier that, although I didn't talk about pop bottles specifically, I did indicate to the interested members who wanted to put the bill in, I was concerned about continuing dedicated taxes. And let me just speak to that for a moment. There's a great deal of excitement, and I think appropriate excitement, for finding jobs for people in the state of Oregon through a CCC-type program. And I told them, incidentally, that I support that. It's a good idea. However, once you dedicate it, I would have to guess, as our economy gets better, and it will, that allure is going to diminish, but we still have that dedicated money for that project. And so if we think it's a really good idea, we can find a source for it, but not dedicate that source, and that was the first side of it. Get the program going and put it into effect. The second part of it was where they were going to use a capital investment to buy centers. And again, I said to them, we have projects all over the state of Oregon and young people all over the state of Oregon. And if you do a center thing, they either have to come to the center or you're going to do just projects around that center. And why make a capital investment? Broaden it. Now, those are just operations of a good idea. And that's my reaction, as I told them.
I want to make sure I understand this. Are you supporting the, call it the live at home concept then for the Civilian Conservation Corps, as opposed to them living in a camp, barracks kind of setting for a year? I'm not clear where you're going.
I guess, yes, that would be, I mean, I hadn't thought of it the way you just described it, but what that would really do is make the whole state and all the young people around the state available for whatever projects are around the state, rather than centering around a capital investment. Number one, we have to buy these places and then centering around that. The CCC thing, as you know, had centers, but they were mostly Forest Service related kind of projects. And I'm just saying, gosh, why can't we expand it out a little broader? Now, let me quickly say this to you, that, you know, you look at an idea, something that somebody else thought about, I'm just reacting to it. Let's see how we can make it work is basically what I'm trying to say to you. There may be some other ideas out there that I haven't mentioned.
Governor, to promote high-tech, there are a couple of bills. One was set up a high-tech, or I guess a science and technology corporation. Another was set up a council within the executive or economic development department. Do you favor one of the other of those ideas to help promote high-tech?
Just heard about one of them yesterday in our staff meeting as we were talking about it. I had Education, Board of Higher Education, and the Coordinating Council was in that Tuesday meeting. And I must tell you that I worry a little bit about it. I'm not going to react directly to it, but I worry about it. I worry about our consortium right now, which is outside of the existing system. The consortium, as you know, is the one that's is working with that extra money that I asked for in the special session last year. I agreed to the consortium, but it's just outside of higher education. And I'm worried about another group outside of education determining what happens to education. We're fragmented an awful lot. It's just a reaction. That's all I'm giving you right now.
Governor, you proposed a $3.3 billion budget to be, to the legislature. It appears as if they're not going to spend that much. How far down are you willing to go on that spending recommendation?
I can't.
Before everybody starts pinching and hurting.
I'm going to fight on the issues. And I can't answer it for you in terms of how far back. I adopted a level that I thought was an appropriate level, but I've been around long enough to know that as it goes through the process in the Oregon legislature that they're going to find maybe a different priority or maybe find ways of saving that I hadn't discovered when I developed the budget. You're asking what's the bottom line. I can't give you that. I really don't know. I can tell you that I'm very worried when I hear some members figure that the $20 million for correction beds is an easy amount of $20 million to get. And so I'm going to scrap for that. In other words, I don't agree with that $20 million, but there may be others in which I might agree. So I can't give you that answer. I'll look at it all as they develop it, and the picture becomes clearer.
Governor, will we know how you want to spend that $20 million? Site hasn't been selected. Your office hasn't said which of the seven options being studied by corrections you would settle on. Which one of the options do you have any, predisposition for? I'm on that list of seven.
No,
how do you want to spend the money?
I'll take my advice pretty much as I listen to corrections and the alternatives that are given to me. We do know that there was a suggestion about Prigg Cottage, but as it turned out, it really wouldn't net us too many added beds. But that was the first thought of it. And now they're looking at some other possible areas in which they would try to create the beds we're looking for the $20 million. We have to also relate it to, the $20 million only buys you so much.
Well,
it isn't.
How soon before you tell the legislature how you want to spend that $20 million? Right now, it's just an expenditure item for a subject with no plan.
Well, I'll move more quickly than the legislature is moving on the questions, and I'll give them an answer before they really need to have to make that final decision. I'll have to do it, and I'll be prepared for it when that time comes. I continue to do that, but if you really look at what we were discussing, the net receipts plan was the only definitive plan that was really out there in bill form. Of course, now the Van Vliet Courtney bill is out there in Hostica. I'm not sure about the Hostica Hendrickson bill. Maybe it is drafted. I haven't seen it myself. But let me at least make the relationship that mine was out there against the world. About any plans, there it was all by itself. And now we're getting compared to what? And that's where the process we're going through right now. Compared to Van Vliet Courtney, compared to Hendrickson Hostica, compared to where there are several organizations. And so now we begin a comparison process. And I can't give you a timetable. I'm going to wait and see how things are shaking up. Sure, I talk to people constantly about the plan, but I don't think I have enough time to talk to enough people to get them to understand the whole plan.
Conceptually, if you have to accept the sales tax, and that's all very speculative, of course, should local governments have to come under some sort of reduction or spending cap as the school districts, everyone wants to own the school districts, so according to Van Vliet, would leave local districts pretty much alone, local government, city, and county.
My concept is limiting property taxes, as you know. And obviously, when I come at it that way, everyone's affected by that. Cities, counties, water districts, school districts, the whole works. And that's where I think it should be. People always think in terms of the schools or the water districts or cities or counties. I'm converting my thinking to the taxpayer. The taxpayer who's putting in the money for all of these. I do like the element, for example, of, I'm not sure the name of the organization, but it's the cities and counties and whomever, they just developed their plan, where they're going to return the money pretty much as they were using, for example, on the 30% property tax relief. So it's an offset against the taxes of the property taxpayer. The other element is the control of taxes, and that's the one I'm looking at under anybody's plan. I'm pretty much finished.
Do you find there is any truth in the conclusion of the last few days that the state must reduce income to tax burden in order to attract new business?
Truth in this case is perception. And I really mean it seriously. I was talking with a young man in the hall the other day and who was supporting of the sales tax and did talk about the corporate officers or the management of high tech, and they were concerned about coming into Oregon because of the high income tax. That's what we hear. However, I said to him, and I know I'm correct, that he and all the others will pay at least as much, if not more, dollars in taxes under a sales tax plan, even if you do reduce property taxes or do reduce income tax. You're collecting X number of dollars from Oregonians, and you'll collect at least that much from them. But that's perception versus reality. The reality is what I'm talking about. They're talking about perception, and I have to deal with perception. Perception is real, and in the minds. Gradually, however, as we're talking about it, maybe some of the message that I'm talking about is getting through. I don't know. But you asked, do I agree? I only agree, yes, because it's perceptually so, not because it really is a better tax system.
Governor, I believe you were present last summer when the U.S. Bank kicked off and argued with us. Were you, what was your reaction when you found out they gave $30,000 to taxpayers for a better economy of a purely political organization, which was formed for only one purpose, promotion of the sales tax? Do you think that was ethical on the part of Laureata's bank to do that, to try to lure customers?
I don't know if I'd use the ethical approach in answering your question. It's not something that I think they should have done. However, I will tell you that they committed to spend over $900,000 for a variety of economic development efforts, and by and large, I think they did a very good job with it. And so I certainly wouldn't condemn the whole program because of one $30,000 expenditure, which I don't think they should have made.
You communicate that to Mr. Laureata?
No, I didn't.
Did you know in advance that organization would get the money?
No.
Would you have counseled him not to do that, had you known?
But they didn't ask me.
Would you have been there that day, I guess?
I certainly would have counseled him against it, yes. But I, no, that was, they deal with it autonomously. It's money that they brought in, and they've used most of it, I would say, in very good efforts for economic development.
Governor, could you try my question again?
Yeah.
Your
question is, are people not coming to Oregon because of our high income tax, therefore we're going to hurt economic development? Is that basically it?
Yeah, should the burden, is it really scaring away business? And should the income tax burden be reduced?
Well, first, I do think the income tax should be reduced because that's what I proposed in 1979. However, that depends on the situation. Now you know that I'm proposing the other way. But I think in the long run, any state of Oregon should work for a lower tax, and I believe that. If we'd had a normal period of time during my governorship as Oregon, I think you would have seen us reducing income taxes. We didn't have that normal period of time. I would have to grant to you that I believe the only argument that I would find legitimate is that there are some people who look at the income tax, decide they don't want to come into Oregon, even if it helps their corporation. And that's been going on for a great number of years. Now, how pervasive it is, how many companies we will lose because of it, I can't answer that. And when I tell you that, I have to say that we look at California, IOUs, $2 billion debt. Look at Washington, which just increased their sales tax. You know, you have to compare us to somebody else. I will say to you that I firmly believe that Oregon will get its share of businesses expanding in Oregon and coming to Oregon. I believe that.
Do you think that high certification by the state and the city can be seen as meaning that there is a limit to how far we'll go to attract business or keep business?
No. As a matter of fact, I think we came off very well, and they're indicating that the state of Oregon was going to do what it reasonably could do to either encourage or keep businesses within the state. I think that message got out very well. And we have to understand what's considered reasonable among the business industry. I would say to you that Hyster hasn't really enamored itself a great deal among business people by their demands on government. I get notes and I talk to my colleagues in business, and they weren't very excited about the state even considering giving $6 million to Hyster.
Governor, there's a rumor that President Reagan might be dropping in on an Oregon mill after he hosts the Queen of England in San Francisco next month. So do you think an Oregon mill is a good example of how Reaganomics is working in the West?
Yes.
Would that be an open mill or a shut?
I was, as you know, very agitated and continue and will continue to be agitated about the fact that there was the budget, high budget deficits holding up interest rates and how it was affecting the state of Oregon. And that I indicated in my communication with the president that it's only when interest rates come down that we can improve the economy, and Oregon's economy, of course, would improve. So you know my position generally in that subject. I think it would do well. As a matter of fact, I would hope he would come here to see with his own eyes. However, I'm grateful to say that the timber industry is in much better health than it was just 3 or 4 months ago. I get weekly reports in regard to the employment and the actual employment in the industry, or those that are unemployed in the industry, and those mills that are part-time mills. And the unemployment is going down, and the part-time mills are becoming fewer.
Do you think the president should take credit for that?
Well, I think he has to take some credit. I don't think anyone can take full credit I don't think he can take full credit for what got us here. You know, we didn't get here just during his term of office as President of the United States, and I think that's a fair statement, not a defensive one in defending the president. It just didn't happen in the last 2.5 years. And so he has to get a little credit for at least something's happening out there, which I can't even understand. As deficits are going up, interest rates are coming down. I really am baffled. But credit or criticism, you know, I can't give it all. Can't give him all the criticism or all the credit. I'll take a lot of credit for what's happened here. No.
Will you be there then if the president decided to drop in a mill in Roseburg?
Well, I'm going to be at the Western Governors, and I have a full schedule meeting with our congressional delegation and hopefully with some cabinet officials. And so I really can't answer that question. We did talk to the Intergovernmental Office just before I came out. And their statement was that they really didn't know about that visit. They knew the president was going to be out in the West for a week. They do know that sometimes as these things happen, they try to see where the president might go, and maybe that's where the rumors started. But there's no definitive answer on that the president would be here.
Would you be willing to let us know, well, me exclusively, if he is coming?
Oh, yes, yes. Exclusive.
I'll tell the rest.
I know you will. You'll be the pool reporter, yes.
Governor, your first term, you repeatedly said that you wouldn't threaten to veto bills.
Well, let me just explain to you that you learn how to deal with the bodies that you have to deal with, and certainly if you don't find a better ways or different ways to deal with it, you should. And I'm saying to you that I'm thinking that if I'm more definitive on vetoes, it might be, now this is obviously going to be every time you turn around I'm going to veto a bill kind of thing, but if I think it's going to be useful, I will.
Is it a harder bunch to deal with this time?
No, not necessarily. No, listen, I didn't know how much rascals they were till I left the body.
Judging by the result, without being here for that last week, is it going to affect your age group?
At times, I think it is. It wasn't, obviously I wasn't running any particular drill. I wanted to slow the bill up is what I wanted to do so we could really look at it. And it worked in that respect. Strategy and how I deal and the way I'm going to deal, it's not going to really dramatically change. Things are going to change as I learn better ways to do things. That's
Governor,
just fine.
A conscious decision on your part and the change of strategy, or were you just mad?
Well, I was kind of mad.
Did you sit down when your term began and think that you're going to change the way you dealt?
No, I didn't sit and map out a plan. I was kind of mad about the way they were running that bill and just slamming it through, and it could be a better bill, and it's a good one. Incidentally, I want to suggest something to you. This is a good idea, 2373, and I've always said so, and I think it's a much better bill than it was when it left the House. But there's a big to-do about this, and you all know it. It's a subject of a couple of our media availabilities, And yet one of the biggest things that we have hasn't yet moved or gotten much attention, and that's the Joint Training and Partnership Act. That's $30 million available for jobs. And we're trying to get the legislature to move on that. And that's a biggie. Now, this, I can't say that this 2373 is a small potatoes, but in the measurement between those two, this is really big. I wish they would move as aggressively and as swiftly on the Joint Training and Partnership Act as they did on 2373. I'm satisfied that we've started our negotiation with some members of the legislature to get this thing moving, because that's a big one.
Well, Governor, have you been made aware that a lot of the people who serve on private industry councils see the next several months as crucial, because they say there is a major power struggle developing between the former federal bureaucrats who ran the CETA programs versus the private industry people, and who will, in fact, control the picks? Have you been made aware of that? Do you agree?
Oh, sure. I don't know all the wheels inside the wheels, but that's one of them. And when I addressed the council after they were appointed, and we had a meeting here in Salem with the various consortium and the various groups around the state, and I warned them about turf battles. And I said, I just am not going to sit still for turf battles. We have something that is important to people, and I'm not going to sit still for that kind of a thing. So yes, I'm very definitely aware of that. We'll try to deal with that. And when I say that to you, we recognize it to be a problem. It is not something that I'm interested in. When I say that, we're only interested in getting people jobs. That's all. And what organization runs it is of less importance to me.
Well, apparently the problem, I may not have made this clear, apparently the problem, Governor, is that the PICs may be dominated by former CETA bureaucrats who the private industry people tell us don't have the experience in dealing with the private job market and understanding how it operates.
Okay. We're limited, I would first have to tell you, by the federal law that says if there's 200,000, you've got to give them the award. We don't have a choice there. And that's been incidentally part of our problem. But we are limited by federal law. Where we have flexibility, we'll use it.
Since you're heading up the Western Governors Conference this summer, are you forming any kind of resolution that you plan to bring to the governors, anything?
Well, neither of those. I'm sure I'll have something. But I'll be honest with you, I haven't thought about that meeting right now. After we get through the national governors, and I'll be talking with some of our Western governors, obviously there. We'll have a Western governors meeting there, in Washington, that is. And then we'll see what we need to do come, it's the latter part of June, I think, this year.
Do you think of any particular issue that you would come to?
Not right now, but that doesn't mean there isn't one. I just haven't thought about it. Honestly, I haven't thought about it right now.
Where's that
in? No, I'll tell you. This is, it's the Outlaw Inn. In Kalispell, why? Yeah, why does everybody laugh when I say Outlaw Inn and all the politicians are going to be there in Kalispell, Montana? So it's going to be very nice.
Governor, you're supposed to talk to the freshman members in 3 weeks. Who requested that?
Mr. Bennett, Representative Bennett.
Do you have any message?
I really don't know what they want to talk about. I'll try to find out before I go. I did accept the invitation, however.
I think they want to know how Bill gets through the
question. it might be. The first thing was to accept it. In the letter request, didn't indicate what they wanted to talk about. There may be something there especially they want to talk about, and we'll try to address that. If not, then I'll just try to make up my own agenda, which might include my tax plan. Who knows?
I see Bob Smith. In fact, maybe he can answer it better than you, but you're the boss. You can answer. I'll ask you. Will the forecast be out before March 1st?
He's nodding his head yes, but there's not much time between March now and March 1st.
Not before next Monday.
Not before
maybe
next Monday.
Maybe on Monday. We're trying it out. We're trying it out. When we get it done, it will be released.
Thank you, Robert.
I might tell you what I indicated, and I haven't seen anything from it, but it was a couple of weeks ago anyway we talked about this, that I don't, I'd be surprised if there ain't change in this biennium or the projection for next biennium. But the one I'm really looking at more carefully, or the one I'm kind of expectantly looking forward to, is the May one. There, I would be surprised if they didn't up our, incidentally, there's no science to what I'm telling you, just a general feel. I'd be surprised if they didn't up our expected revenues. But I don't expect much change on this one.
Governor, a couple weeks ago, you expressed anger about the way one subcommittee weighed against me and treated your office budget. You kind of hinted that there were ways you could get even.
Well, you know, get even is a kind of an evil term. I have asked for the legislative budget.
You found anything in
that? No, they haven't given it to us yet. It's not yet prepared. We've asked for it repeatedly, but it's not yet a filled-in budget.
Would you consider, after having gotten that it's approved by the legislature as it's formed, and assuming that they approve your budget and cuts in it, would you consider...
Terry, I'm not going to start the fight right now. I'll wait till it's necessary to start a fight. So I'm not going to answer the question. I'm going to look at their budget just like they're looking at mine. Now, that really has not been traditional in the past. The legislature prepares their budget and take their criticism or praise, whatever it is, and same thing with the governor. Some have described the actions of that subcommittee from the fact that a couple of the members are freshmen, I'll deal with it. I'll deal with it. Media availability this morning, the first on the trucker's strike. You mean eliminating the slogans?
Ban the ballots.
Yes.
Yeah,
I'll sign. It is one of the biggest. I thought that I would write a message with all these slogans that would explain why I'm signing the bill, and I haven't had time to work that one out. Yeah, that makes good sense. Should have been a long time.
You got the bill yet?
No, it's not on my desk. No.
Any personal thoughts about the name rotation issue? So that where they have to rotate the names of the candidates a certain percentage of time in each position, would you be inclined to?
I don't know if it, I don't really think name rotation makes any difference at all. I really don't.
And very expensive, do you agree with that?
Yes, yeah. It's a very complicated process to make sure that it all happens. And I really don't think it makes sense at all. As long as they do it alphabetical, it's okay with me.
What about
vote? No, I'm only kidding. It really doesn't make it. I think you can flip a coin or draw straws and just let the ballot run.
What about vote by mail?
Vote by mail I'm a little more concerned about. I don't have all the answers, and so when I tell you that, I'm just saying I'm concerned about it. It disrupts the process. That doesn't mean we can't change to it, but obviously the ballots have to go out, and then they're voted on, and then they're mailed back, and they have to get here before the election. And I'm thinking in terms not of just necessarily a political campaign in the sense of running for office, but I'm thinking of ballot measures. It changes your timing for trying to persuade the voters, and you have to dovetail the voter's pamphlet along with that. So that cycle is a little bit out of whack. I cannot disagree with the Secretary Paulus said we have absentee ballots, and so there is no reason why a million people couldn't send their absentee ballots under the present system we have. And everybody vote by mail under the present system, which is absentee ballots. Could be done today. Well, I don't know what to make of any race in Illinois or Chicago. It's hard to figure it out over there. It was an interesting. They got so much machine stuff that I don't really understand. And I guess one machine worked better than the other one. I haven't looked at that carefully. But everything I understand, I don't think that's going to. The Republican really doesn't have much of a chance in Chicago. So I don't think that's going to happen. But I don't. I'm not that close to it. I find these things as interesting news, and that's about all.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our primary to maybe find out that we really aren't all that bad to start with. I know that independents themselves are concerned about their opportunity to make a selection in a primary election, and someone might say to them, well, you made your choice to exclude yourself. I don't think we can take that attitude. I think it's important that we allow, and this bill does provide, that parties will be the one to decide that. Republican Party or the Democrats, if they would allow independents to vote in their primaries. And I'm very supportive of that concept. I see Bill back there in case you want to talk to him about it, but I wanted to bring up both of those subjects. One of most broad and general concern right now, and that's the trucker strike, and the other one a special concern of my own.
In such a primary, then, it could conceivably happen that the Republicans could choose to allow independents to vote in theirs in that May election, and the Democrats, for instance, might not, so that would be an, is it a party option?
Yes, yes.
It's not just a complete open
no,
state primary.
No, there was some concern. As a matter of fact, I think a lawsuit only said that independents would be able to vote in primaries. And if I recall correctly, it was an attorney general opinion that said you can't tell parties what to do. And so we came back subsequently and said parties can decide if they want the independents to vote in their primary. And as a governor, if this were to pass, I would urge my party to allow them to do it.
Governor? How much additional state money is it costing to patrol the state highways during the trucker strike?
I can't answer that. I don't really think it's going to cost any additional state money. We pulled troopers off of some of the state and county roads and put them on the interstates. So they would be regular duty law enforcement. Certainly there is additional cost in the investigation of some of the incidences, but I can't tell you that. I don't have that figure.
Governor, does the fact that the open primary bill was introduced by a Republican and has the support of a Republican governor lead to the conclusion that it is a Republican bill?
No, it just shows that we're smarter than some Democrats.
Back to the truck strike. Do you have some other plan for additional doing something else besides the current enforcement activity? I mean, what's next?
Well, next, of course, is what's, you know, it depends on what happens. We were very lucky, and I must applaud the independent truckers in the main, and they're really a great sense of responsibility in 1979. I'm asking for a return of that. We did have a chance to talk with them, as I'm sure many of you remember. I indicated to them I'm supportive of whatever it is that they need to accomplish, at least at that period of time. I'm not trying to be unfair to them. I'm saying you have a right to strike. No one has a right, however, to endanger lives or property, and I want to make sure that signal is very clear again from my office.
If it's shown that that in fact heavy trucks are not paying their fair share, are you sympathetic to the state subsidies to allow them to continue the lifestyle that they have adopted?
Would you ask that question? Am I sympathetic to what?
To what amounts to a state subsidy of the independent trucker. Because they're saying these taxes are going to put us out of business. I think
my studies in the past, and I'm doing nothing but remember, and I can't give you any figures. Oregon taxes very heavily the trucks. And matter of fact, by comparison to other states, Oregon has been quite high. And that's come from many, many studies made in the past as to the trucker's share of pain, share of cost for the highways in regard to any damage they may do. So as far as Oregon is concerned, I think we've pretty well extracted from truckers a relatively, in relative terms, their cost of using our highways.
Governor, the BPA Administrator Peter Johnson was here last week to brief you on what's happening in the Northwest Power situation, and I'm sure he must have told you about whoops. Would you share with us what he had to tell you about whoops in the Northwest in terms of that, and what do you know is happening on that front right now?
Actually, my visit with Peter Johnson was more of a two-way conversation than just a one-way conversation, because I had some thoughts of my own I wanted to share with him, as I have in the past. Actually, in whoops, it's there's nothing really news that he told me, in the sense that anything that you don't know or I don't know, it's still a very difficult situation. We're trying to resolve it. They're concerned in regard to it, they, Bonneville, because 1, 2, and 3 are part of their responsibility. 4 and 5 are not part of their responsibility, but as we all know, it has an effect. If there's a default, it will have an effect on not only Bonneville bonds, but state bonds and all the rest. That scenario is well known. And so it's just a matter of just discussing it and indicating a mutual concern, but there was no answer. There isn't any good answer out there. And again, I reemphasized my interest in number 3, continuing and being able to sell that power to California, and that's been a public position I've taken. I've also talked to him, and incidentally, I'm now going my conversation to him rather than his to me, about my interest in the increased rates, particularly agriculture, but obviously among all of us, and suggesting we ought to be able to find a way to sell us that surplus power, which we're now selling to California. They're getting it cheaper than we are. And there's some public law that says you can't do it, but I still think inventive minds can work it out. So there's no conclusions. We were just kind of going over things we talked about before.
One follow-up. In the past, particularly last year, you were very critical of the Bonneville Power Administration several times publicly, letters and that type of thing. How would you characterize your relationship with them right now?
Well, our relationship has continued really quite reasonable. I was even getting strong with Peter Johnson. It was a matter of differences of opinion. So we really haven't separated along that line, and so ours is not strained. However, that doesn't mean that either he or I can express ourselves as strongly as we have feel inclined to do so, and we've continued that.
What's your biggest area of disagreement right now?
Well, the matter of being a little bit more innovative in terms of how we can deal with this power that we have, and sometimes a surplus power that I think really we ought to accrue to Oregon's benefit rather than California's.
If your NAFTA seeds tax dies early in this session, can you come around to support any other income tax plan, such as the Hendrickson proposal that widens the tax brackets, that changes the tax rate schedule?
I haven't looked.
Is that an idea you ruled out?
I haven't ruled out anything, but I haven't studied anything. So when you ask the question, I can only answer it in the sense that I answered to the committee. You know, if you don't like what I have, just let me look at what you have. But this gives me an opportunity to maybe tell you something. I would look at it in the context of if there is some kind of consensus or a major support for a bill. Just by a governor introducing something, it gives it kind of a high profile added impetus. I'm looking for something in that same range. I'm not going to react necessarily to each individual legislator's concept of taxation. I'm going to wait to see what kind of plan evolves out of the legislative body. So far, and now we are into February, I really haven't seen any definition, even a hazy, unfocused picture of what the legislative leadership is thinking about, either in terms of the budget or revenue. And I guess I shouldn't say I'm impatient at this point in time. It's still a little early, but it's kind of moving slow, and I really don't see anything even shaping up.
Have you found any Republican to carry your proposal?
No, but I haven't sought one.
Why not?
It's just a matter of what I consider timing. It's my own judgment. I would tell you that my perception right now, and I guess it's particularly because there is no other plan that seems to have what we'd call a real head of steam, the legislature, leadership, whomever, Republicans, Democrats, are reluctant to say this is dead, I'm not going to deal with it anymore, because they really don't have one of their own that they can rally around yet. So I think they'll hold mine in reserve until they see one that they think they can get aboard on.
Well, how can you verge on impatience when you don't have somebody to carry your own?
No, I'm only talking not impatience in terms of moving my forward, impatience if they have an alternative plan, because in the sense that I've said it, that there's not a great deal of enthusiasm for the plan, and I can understand that. That doesn't mean it's been rejected yet, which is also very important, I would add. Okay, that's the case. I'll accept that for the moment. Now, where's yours if you don't really like mine?
Governor, it's difficult to believe that you didn't consider some sort of concept similar to Hendrickson's when you both relied on the income tax. Her plan got a fair amount of attention when she introduced it at one of the special sessions. I would find it very hard to believe that if you did a thorough job of searching for various ways of raising the income tax, that you didn't consider that, and I'm wondering why you rejected that particular one, because I can't believe you didn't think about it.
I didn't really consider her plan, but I want to tell you, it is not as if I'm coming brand new to the whole question of taxation. I have studied, I can't say her plan, because hers is hers. However, in 20 years in a revenue committee, I've heard about every plan that there is available and all the varieties. And I'm fully aware of brackets, bracket creeps, changes in brackets, raising brackets, changing levels of income. This is not unfamiliar, so I'm not starting from scratch. And so I didn't have to go back and restudy everything that has happened over all the years. Over the years in my relationship to a tax committee, now called revenue, I acquired some philosophies that I believe in, and so I proceeded along the line. Once I saw there was a difference in need for revenue, I thought my opportunity to proceed on the way I thought I ought to do it. So I didn't sit down in that room and study all possible plans before I arrived at mine. I'm saying to you, I already had a background in taxation, and I came up with what I thought was a good balance.
Why is a more regressive income tax increase better than a more progressive one?
Well, mine is not regressive. As you recall, Representative Priestley was applauding it because it was so progressive.
Relative.
And you have to understand these things are relative. I would ask the question of her, did she consider my plan before she came up with hers? I'm only saying to you that I have studied enough taxation to, I came up with what I feel comfortable in recommending.
Well, help me understand how the 1% flat net receipts rate is more progressive than changes in the rate.
No. No. See, you're still picking on one part of the program.
Well, I need to help make your case for me so that I can understand.
That's fine. I tried to make it the other day, but maybe it's continually becoming more obvious of what I was doing. The net receipts or flat rate is not a progressive tax. That's not. Now, there's theories of taxation, regressive and progressive, and I keep forgetting that one, which is a flat rate tax. But anyway, these are theories of taxation. You notice that instead of just keeping a net receipts, we continued with the present system. At the federal level, you know they're talking about pure flat rate. I don't support a pure flat rate. It goes against my own personal philosophy. So we kept the progressive income tax as part of our structure. And at the same time, we try to ameliorate some of the effects on some of the taxpayers, and now I'm moving over to the tax credit. And so when you look at the pieces of the program, including, I would add, the expanded HARP, see, these are all pieces and parts of my tax program. And I believe that it's reasonably balanced. Now, I'm not going to say it is like it was, or it can't be different than it is. I'm only saying this is the one I came up with, and I feel pretty comfortable about it.
Governor, yeah. Why is the not made a stronger effort to sell your tax plan?
Oh, that's you're presuming that I'm not. And the strength of an effort depends on whether I'm talking internally or externally. And I'm talking to legislators and in my own way, and I think I'm making some headroads. I begin to see out there that there's a better beginning understanding of the fact that my tax plan is not just net receipts. I've been talking to a lot of people, including beside legislators, and I'm finding there's now a better understanding of what it's all about.
Are you finding there's now more support for it?
I think there's more, but I'm not even beginning to call it a groundswell. But I would ask you the same thing. I don't see any great support for any tax plan, any of them, so far. So mine's not out of the race yet because there isn't any other that's really genuinely in the race that's running as I was going to say, as strong as. I guess that's a comparative word. As weak as. I'm not sure.
Well, the Henderson plan was proposed this morning with two principal sponsors. So that gives them, I guess, one more vote than you have to go there. Is that right?
In the legislature, yes.
Well, that's where it's going to be.
Well, I understand that.
Is there anyone other than Representative Priestley who you know to support your plan?
No, but I haven't backed anybody into a corner to get them to say yes or no. I mean, it's fragile.
Will you at some point?
Oh, yes. Sure, I will. You have to, you may be impatient about how I'm dealing with this. I'm dealing with it in a way that I think is a correct way and using my best judgment. Yes.
Change the subject for a minute.
Sure.
The three Democratic congressmen have just reintroduced their wilderness bill. You were quite critical of it when he recently in the lame duck session. Now, at the same time, the Assistant Secretary of Agriculture has come up with what some are calling a rare three involving wilderness. I'd like to know your thoughts on both of those things.
I don't think there ought to be a rare three. My criticism still remains on the million acres. However, I would say that needs to be solved this Congress, that meaning the wilderness question in Oregon. And it takes on at least two other parts, as I see it. One is to solve the wilderness question, and included in that would be the release language. In other words, I don't want any more rare threes. I want this question settled, and at the same time gives us an opportunity for what we would call relief language, and that's the other question in terms of the timber industry.
Talking about contracts.
Correct.
Can I just ask one follow-up to that? Your opposition was quite stern in the one introduced in the lame duck session. Can you foresee in this session any possibility of a compromise to where you might accept a million acres if it were combined with release language or release?
No. I can see a compromise. I can't tell you where I would compromise, but I can't see one in which I would be involved that would mean a million more acres.
Will you fight this as far opposing?
Pardon?
Or were you opposed just as strong before? In other words, would you do more than send a letter?
My opposition really was bringing up the question during the course of the lame duck session. And I was kind of angered by it and came out of nowhere. I am not as angered now because the question is brought up and we need to have it brought up and it needs to be solved in this Congress. The fact that I don't agree with a million acres, I don't think is fatal to the whole question. Now it's up, we can talk about it, and we can arrive at some kind of an acceptable acreage as far as wilderness is concerned.
Governor, do you agree with Secretary Ballas that political action committees are posing some sort of threat to the democratic process, and
do you support her efforts to take away tax credits to donations given to political action?
I view the whole matter of political contributions, including PACs, I suppose a little differently than others, because it's a matter of your own personal state of mind. I've never considered being pressured either by individual contributions or political action committees. And so, you know, to me, the question of being politically pressured is not as serious as I'm sure it would be in the eyes of some others. I don't view PACs as evil as some do. But I must tell you, the thing that I count as the greatest success in my campaign were the number of contributors. And I think if you eliminate, for example, someone having to appeal to a PAC, but strain a little bit more and get a much broader group of people, I think it makes good sense to do it, just for no other than political reason. By that I mean, if you get somebody to contribute a dollar, they contribute to me a dollar, I also have their vote, because they're committed their money to me. And so, although I don't consider them as evil, as some do, I think it's healthy for the process to reach out and try to get individual contributors. And I would document that with what I actually did. I did not support the dollar checkoff. And they were unable to continue a dollar checkoff through my administration. It sunsetted. It comes from the same thing. I think the political parties ought to get out there and work for their money and not sit back and get it the easy way. And so that's the same philosophy I'm now expressing.
So you wouldn't endorse legislation then restricting PACs? You would leave that more up to the integrity of the candidates to solicit widespread contributions? Because obviously your campaign, you had both. You did have support from PACs.
Oh, yes, absolutely. But we had how many? 5,000, 6,000? Contributors. And I count that. I mean, I'm real proud of that one. I mean, I knew I had a lot of them. And all I know, what I maybe crystallized it a little, that I told you I don't consider PACs evil. However, I certainly am supportive of Norman Paulus's concept of not making it deductible. And certainly if it came across my desk and legislature passed it, I'd sign such a bill.
Governor, back to the wilderness issue. Can you give your case once more why you oppose a million acres and what you think is appropriate level?
We have to realize, first of all, that there's 1,200,000 acres of wilderness in Oregon right now. People seem to kind of forget that. They also seem to kind of forget we're going through a wilderness study with the Bureau of Land Management. So we're not even talking about all of Oregon yet. We're just talking about the Forest Service wilderness. We have a million two right now. I proposed in 1979 69,000 acres, and we studied it pretty carefully. And what I'm getting at are areas in the state of Oregon that really should be protected for a real good reason. And those are my reasons, but I went through it and I selected it. I don't think we ought to make wilderness out of highly productive land in terms of growing trees. I don't know what the million acres that are being proposed, where they are. I have no idea where those pieces of property might be. However, I'm saying to you that we're going to add something to Forest Service wilderness, and we're clearly going to add something to BLM wilderness, and we already have 1,000,002. So the question is, do I like wilderness or not? I think wilderness is important. I believe in it. The only question is how much, and I think 1,000,000 is too much.
So your figure is still the 69,000 from the previous time.
Well, right now it is, but I'm saying again, I'm willing to look at something. The question, the more serious question, Boyd, is that we have to settle the wilderness question. The devastation, I don't want to take too much of your time, but we've got overbids on timber, we've got overuse of some federal forest land that is available for cutting, we have overuse of private forest land, all because of wilderness study. That's not good forest practice. I didn't use the word fool around. I said, take a look at it carefully.
Anyway,
I'm sorry.
If they were to take that one portion out, 1% net receipts tax out, plug in Mark Hendricks' graduated personal income tax structure, and leave the rest in place as far as property tax, limitation, and Super Hard program and all that, how would that grab you?
Can't answer, because honestly, I have not studied her program and the impact of it. I didn't then during the special session. I didn't do it while I was looking at my own plan, and I'll look at it. But I'm just not going to answer your question until I study it.
Governor,
How do you look at the lottery proposals out right now? Do you support those?
I do not support lottery. I don't support lottery on two counts, and I've said it several times. I'll tell you again. First, it's just a personal thing with me. I don't think gambling is an appropriate thing. Secondly, I don't think we ought to set a bureaucracy, a new bureaucracy up to collect, now I hear it's $25 or $30 million. There's a lot better ways, simpler ways to collect that kind of money than with a lottery.
Coming back to the trucker strike also, there's a proposal possibly that would boost vehicle registration to $20 to handle repairs of Oregon roadways and also take the burden off the truckers. How do you see something like that?
You're talking about the state of Oregon?
Right.
I don't know as if the state of Oregon should address the national question. The state of Oregon should not be in a position of reducing taxes on truckers because the federal tax went up. I think our relationship of taxation as far as the state tax is concerned is a well-balanced one. That's one side of it. The other is I have no objection to raising license fees, and I've supported it in the past. It's ridiculous what Oregon is doing, and we know that we're a haven for other people to register their cars in our state. And I believe that the need is so great. I've supported the gas tax increase and also the license increase because we're losing a tremendous capital investment out there. And I'm sure that Oregonians really don't want us to do it. So I'm separating the questions.
If you have time for one more question, I don't know if you've had a chance to talk with the House Speaker or heard reports of his reception at the White House. Basically, he was left cooling his heels for 40 minutes outside the White House gate while trying to deliver our nuclear freeze resolution to the president. The president nor any of his staff came out to address him. Finally, a functionary came out and said there was no one here to speak to you. Do you think that was merely a public relations error, or do you see that as some sort of statement by the White House on the freeze issue and the statement made by Oregonians and other states concerning the issue?
I think it's a public relations mistake. The president made very clear that he doesn't think these nuclear freeze petitions are appropriate. So that's a position that's very well known to us. However, I think that the White House, through someone, should at least respect the views of a state. We have sent that material back to the president and to Congress as the people asked us to do, and that's been done. When we have a person personally delivering, it isn't Grant and Cairns, it's someone representing the state of Oregon, and I just think it's just good manners to receive it well, whether you like the issue or not.
Do you have time for another question?
Sure.
I've been struck by an interesting coincidence that I've noticed. On the one hand, with these WHOOPS contracts, people like Peter Johnson are saying, these utilities have signed these contracts. This is a fundamental tenet of our economic system, of our society. They have to honor the contracts. On the other hand, I've heard yourself and a number of people involved with the timber industry saying these contracts were signed. Situation has changed. They're putting people out of business. We need relief from the contracts. Does that strike you as kind of a contradictory application of the same principle there? The utilities certainly are in shape as some timber companies are with regard to the contracts they signed.
The question you ask really is one that I face quite often. Depends on where you are and what your responsibility is. If I were the rug merchant looking at it, they went out and they made their choice and it was a mistake, and that's part of the great pageant of life. It's not unlike, for example, the bids on timber where they upbid it, and why should we give them relief? On the other hand, I cannot be, as a governor, removed from it. If there's a failure or a default, then it's going to affect Oregonians, and I'm not now just speaking in terms of the ratepayers. It's going to affect the bond prices of the state of Oregon. It's going to affect the bond prices of our cities and counties and school districts. There's no question about that. So we do now have a larger responsibility to try to get it solved. I must tell you, however, that I don't think that we ought to solve it all by ourselves and let the utilities that made the error, and they made an error, get off scot-free. I don't think that's the case. But I do feel very strongly that I should be a part in trying to find a solution, and believe that very much.
Why should the timber companies be allowed contract relief when the utilities aren't?
Well, you made a comparison, but I'll speak to the timber companies themselves. I can tell you the why by telling you what actually did happen and my motivation. Well, I asked for last January for the State Department of Forestry to renegotiate bids. We did. What we actually did was breathe life into 1,800 more jobs. And so when some people talk about the timber companies, I'm talking about the timber workers, the sawmill workers. And so it's my desire to get the sawmill workers back to work. It's not a matter of salvaging companies that they may have made a mistake. The mistake is there. They cannot sell it. They can't cut the tree. They can't produce it. They can't sell it on the market. But who then are the ones that are hurt by that? The sawmill worker. I'm very proud of the fact that we in Oregon asked for the legislation for the State Department of Forestry, and we in Oregon did breathe life into 1,800 more jobs. I think that's neat. Thank you.
Thank you. I think that it really is of any real merit and value. There are those who say they want to be on the side of the small businessman and graduate the corporate tax. I am one of those. I suppose there's some smaller than the Dia brothers, but we are one of those, and I don't know as if that's going to do anything to keep us in business or drive us out of business. I think it's just a uniform tax, and we know what it is, and we pay it. So it can be, theoretically, a point can be made, but I think in actual true life, it doesn't make that much difference to us as small businessmen, and I don't see the need to make that change.
Thank you. Representative Roberts?
Then you would think that percentage or half a percentage or a percentage and a half or 2% in corporate tax wouldn't make any difference to small business?
Well, everything makes a difference.
No. But I mean, you don't think that's significant, Governor?
That's not going to drive me out of business or keep me in business, is what I'm saying to you.
If, Governor, if the graduated corporate were not used to raise money, there was no attempt to raise the high end of the scale, would you still feel that way?
Say that again.
If there were no attempt to raise the high end of the scale beyond 7.5%, the corporations, you would still feel that wasn't an advantage to the smaller businesses in Oregon?
I don't want to presume that it's not an advantage.